I sing and I play electric guitar usually on my own, and I usually write quite sad songs, but I find it hard to put a specific genre on it. People put me under the folk umbrella, which I'm fine with because I like the storytelling tradition of folk music, but I think that sonically I don't always fit under the strict folk category.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think folk is so broad, actually, and sometimes we have this idea that folk is very much the traditional folk, and yet it is very all-encompassing. I'm not sure I would put you under folk, but I can see where that's coming from as well. So if you, in terms of how, what do people say to you? Do they say, oh, you sound like such and such a person?
Yes. I get Elliot Smith quite a lot, which is like, because it's like sad songs on a guitar. But I think I also get PJ Harvey quite a lot when people see me live, because, but again, I think it could be the whole thing about a girl with dark hair playing electric guitar. But I don't mind because I love PJ Harvey. Cat Power, Kate Bush sometimes.
So if I were to ask you, for example, if you had an imaginary night, imaginary bill, and you were putting yourself on the bill and you wanted to theme it in a kind of a context where you fitted in, but also some of the great songs and great artists that you admire, who do you think you might like to put on the bill?
Well, I definitely put PJ Harvey because I've never seen her play live. And the way that she carries herself and the energy that she can transmit just in like her early performances, when she's like performing solo with just her and electric guitar, there's like this amazing attitude and energy that I think people, like, it's women aren't always like allowed to, like, it's like it's still so subversive and shocking for people to see women, well, it shouldn't be, but for a lot of people it is, to see women performing that way by themselves. So in that way, she's been like a huge influence on me, and I definitely put her on the bill. And Nick Cave, I don't sound anything like him, but I love the way that he writes lyrics, his like really dense, metaphorical, full of like literary references and biblical, mythological references. I think listening to Nick Cave songs is like kind of like a treasure hunt. Like every time you listen to it, you get like more clues about what he's, and the same with Joanna Newsom as well. I think she's like my favorite contemporary lyricist. Her songs are like little novels. So. And
is there anyone else? Let's have one more artist say who you might put on there.
Yeah, someone I discovered recently, Aldous Harding. She's kind of like an old French chanteuse mixed with like a sorceress or like a witch or something. She's like her performances are kind of like, she's like the demon and the exorcist at the same time. Like she's just a force of nature.
So Maya, you're going to sing us a song now. Now I know you normally play electric guitar, but I'm having a Maya Sophia unplugged session here. And tell us about the song you're going to sing.
It's called Flowers. I actually wrote it on a really long train journey, when I just finished reading Angela Carter's Bloody Chamber. But it's like a way for me to express like very personal feelings and experiences in a way that's like a fairy tale metaphor in a way. So, yeah.
And this is a new song that you haven't released yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be releasing it in December, I think on the 15th of December, and hopefully do a little like launch, a few launch gigs around. So I haven't organised those yet.
Great. And where will we find it when you do release it?
It will be on Spotify and Bandcamp and SoundCloud and all of those music platforms.
Okay, all the user platforms. Great. So let's hear it. This is Maya Sophia playing acoustic session for me here in Sunday's Well in Cork. and she's going to sing her song Flowers.
When he took me to his chamber, it didn't shock me, I already knew of such illicit desires. Of lust and struggle, the rack and the screw, he wouldn't hear me plead, and willingly I agree. He wouldn't let me bleed, without choice I got down on my knees, and I filled the room with flowers. Carnations, daisies, geraniums and lavender, and hide the thorns of sadness. Tuck tight and a lily petal cadavers, and the morning came in grey, with blood on its hands. He lay contented with his prayer. I lie with another man, I lie with another man. In the end I was his spindle, though deliciously I splintered. I was the cut on his finger, I was his Delilah, his little baby winter. I was small and frail, skeletal and pale, but I was Judith in Holofernes' tent. He never took my heart, but I took his head, and never shame me for such wanton ways, when I'm the secret that would dig his grave. So I fill the room with flowers, carnations, daisies, geraniums and lavender, and hide the thorns of sadness. Tuck tight under lily petal cadavers, and the morning came in grey, with blood on its hands. He lay contented with his prayer. I lie with another man.
So Maya, what I'm interested in is where it began, your journey into songwriting. I suppose for many of us, it's most of us really, it starts with the music that we're listening to when we're younger. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about that, and then about really how, you know, when you started writing and some of your motivation around that.
Okay. Well, music, like the idea of writing music, was really normalized for me because my parents both wrote songs, and it was always around the house when I was little. But my earliest memory of like really being affected by music was hearing Kate Bush, and my mum played her music in the car, and I thought she was like so surreal and strange, and I couldn't get my head around how a human was making those sounds with her voice, and I hated it at first, but then Kate Bush has become like almost like a guiding kind of, like a guiding light, like this amazing force of nature who's just like, in a way, has been with me my whole life. And that song Moving, I think that the album The Kick Inside, I've probably listened to more times than any other album. I just still play it constantly. And then when I was a little bit older, when I was a teenager, I think maybe when I was 15 or 16, I discovered the Velvet Underground, and that was like a huge world opening for me, because I was kind of like caught with like, I wanted to make music, but I didn't know how to record, I didn't really know how to produce or anything like that. I just had like a really bad microphone plugged into my laptop, and I was listening to the Velvet Underground in Nico. And that just sounds like it's recorded in someone's bedroom, and it sounds so raw. but it's amazing. It's like just the most amazing album, and there's something about the straight, like, the really noisy, distorted guitars and Nico's voice that I just love. Her voice is like, she's one of my favorite vocalists. Like, her voice is really dark and sinister, but there's also like an almost like childish kind of tenderness, and almost like there's something like heartbreaking, like heartbreakingly naive to her voice that I just love. I love her.
Yeah, I also love the fact that that music endures, you know. I also spent a lot of time listening to that when I was a teenager, and Nico particularly, I think what you described, that balance of rawness and naivety, and there's sort of a, well, actually it's something like almost contradictory, this kind of worldliness and naivety that go together as well. But yeah,
I think I started sort of teaching myself basic chords on guitar when I was 13 or 14 and writing really bad songs. But then maybe when I was about 15, I started busking, just because I wanted to make some money. I just wanted to have some like pocket money to do stuff. So it was kind of more about the financial gain than actually the music. But like standing on the street and busking and like kind of being on my own, like really made me able to, like, allowed me, it's basically how I learned how to sing, because I don't think I could sing before I even started. And then I started writing and realizing that I like singing and I liked writing.
So what about your actual songwriting process? I mean, everybody has a different process. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to approach songwriting. Can you say a little bit about how it works for you?
Yeah, I usually start off with the words. It's, you know, painfully unpredictable. Like, I'm not able to sit down and have a formula or, you know, say I'm going to write a song today. It will be at a really annoying time, like when I was working, I would get like ideas for a lyric and I'd have to be like serving customers and I'm like, don't forget those words, and like still trying to give people back the right change. So yeah, often when I'm like on trains, when I have to like sit down and just do nothing for a few hours, or like long journeys, is when I do loads of writing in spaces like that, or when I'm on the bus. I'm not really able to just sit down and write at home because I get distracted by like cooking and like, I don't know, washing the dishes and like mundane things that I don't really have. Like, home isn't very good for writing, so it's usually when I'm out, like in movement. And then once I've got like, you know, a notebook full of words, then I can sit down with the guitar, again usually at like a really annoying time, like in the middle of the night, and then I can try and, you know, it's really out of the blue when a song actually comes together.
So the initial inspiration is quite unconscious, and perhaps something to do with being in that occupied state, that you've somehow opened up a space for those things to come in, and then you bring it together later on and craft it more as a song.
Yeah, it starts off like really, you know, loose, and I get like an idea and I need to write it down straight away, and then after that I'll be able to go home and pick up my guitar, and on a good day the song will just kind of fall out sort of fully formed, and then the annoying days I'll have to like labor over a chorus for weeks or something.
And in terms of, I think your songs thematically are very interesting. There's a very strong storytelling element, but it's quite I'm not sure if dreamy is the right word, but it's definitely got a quality that's more ethereal, or a mix of the two, you know. So when you're writing, are you conscious of themes, or conscious of themes reoccurring, or again, are these things that come to you without you really thinking too much about them?
Yeah, well, I'm conscious of reoccurring themes now. But when I'm writing, as I'm writing a song, I'm not really thinking about it in context of my other songs. But it's only in retrospect when I look at like a body of songs and realize they've got similar threads running through them. I find myself writing, like, I will get fascinated by like a historical figure, almost always women. I've written a lot of songs about women who were in some way wronged or silenced or abused, and, you know, not to get like too lofty or precious about it, but in a way, like, trying to give a voice to women that have been silenced. Not that it's my place to do so for other women, but like, I've written a song about Elizabeth Siddal, who was one of the Pre-Raphaelite painters, models, and an artist in her own right, who was just kind of disregarded. And Bridget Cleary, the woman who was, you know, the last witch sort of burning that happened in Ireland. And I've written about Persephone as a kind of symbol of being brought into the underworld at the hands of, like, an abusive man, basically. Yeah, coming back to those themes a lot, which is a bit dark, but
I think that's really, really interesting. You have a new song that you just mentioned around that you haven't released yet.
Yeah.
That's you've written around Bridget Cleary and her story. So I'd love it if you'd play that for us now. Mm-hmm. And it's called?
It's actually untitled at the moment, because it's really recent, but yeah, we'll call it the Bridget Cleary song for now. His wounds in nettle leaves around his neck, an amulet of rabbit feet, a love as deep as winter sea. When the waves rolled out, I was left on the beach, and underneath my petticoats of cotton and calico, a gypsy heart and a mad woman's soul. So stir your tea leaves and butter your bread, but the wife of Michael Cleary won't be home again. Of thunder burned across his chest. He gathered up his hunters and rounded up his men, and they searched along the rivers and the mountains and the glen. But the wife of Michael Cleary won't be home again. The stars glint like cleavers, my love, it was only a fever. I swear I tried to get clean, but it keeps the bats away and it keeps the devil nearer. Look into my eyes, my two round lapis lazuli. Back in our bed, he'd set me alight, and we'd cast the demons out all night, till they doused the flames by the holy well, and the smoke filled up the guilty air, and the village smelt like burning flesh as the changeling was put to rest. And all the ladies shook their heads, bit their lips as they softly said, oh, the scandal, oh, the mess, the wife of Cleary must be dead. The moon gaped like an open mouth as we stood in shock to watch the flames die down. My baby safe, now Liverpool bound, and I'm safe from hell in the hallowed ground. The stars glint like cleavers, my love, it was only a fever. I swear I try to get clean, but it keeps the bats away and it keeps the devil nearer.
Thanks, Maya. That's a really powerful song, very beautiful, too, very powerful story. I think it's really important what you're doing, actually, beyond, you know, as well as being a pleasure to listen to, it's those are really important stories that you're telling. It's very inspiring. And particularly, I think, as women in the music industry and women in music, to hear those stories and hear them through a woman's voice. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about what it's like being a woman in the music industry. I mean, we've been hearing about, you know, it's very, very topical at the moment. Not that it's not always a topic, but in the media it's very topical at the moment, with so much discussing around sexual harassment and the gender pay gap and all these kind of issues that we all know have always been there, and yet there's a sort of a flurry of exposure around them. But there's a danger of that just being, you know, the topic of the moment and then disappearing. And I was very surprised to find out last year when I was doing some research around women in music that in the UK, the PRS, like IMRO, our equivalent of IMRO, discovered that only 14% of their members were women. So that's 14% of their writer and performer members were women, which is mad. And I'm very interested to find out, you know, to see what it's like in this country. I know that having looked at venue listings and just having a look around generally, there is a disproportionate amount of men being played and being played on the radio. And yet the assumption is, when you talk to people about it, no, there's loads of women, you know, and they list off all these women who are playing, so we know that. But I'm wondering then, from your perspective as a woman, you know, is there any experiences you can share with us around that, or anything that you've come up against, or how you feel sometimes when you're on stage? Or
yeah, so much. Well, I mean, you know, being a woman in music is lovely, and I love doing it, that's why I keep doing it. But you are always going to be a woman in music. You're not just going to be a musician, and you'll always be referred to as a female songwriter or a female artist, as though your gender is a genre in itself, which is exhausting, to say the least, and can be very disheartening. Constantly I'm the only woman on the bill, or I'll be playing to a room full of men who are other male musicians, and there is like an expectancy for women in music, or at least in my experience, to like put up with being sexualized or to expect to be sexualized. And and maybe because I write songs that deal with deal with themes like sexuality or and intimacy and you know, very personal themes, that I think men in the music industry maybe see that as they see that as permission to kind of cross a boundary. But I don't think it would matter what I was writing about, but sexual harassment is absolutely huge in the music industry. When I am braver and less fervently angry and upset by lots of things that have happened to me, I'll be able to do one of those like hashtag Me Too things that so many women have really bravely been doing about the acting industry and the film industry, but those things are rampant in music as well. It just even just everyday little things, like I was recently having a meeting with quite a big music industry person in London, and you know, I kind of felt like I was really privileged to be there, and he was doing me a huge favor or giving me this huge opportunity. And we were in a cafe, he had just ordered some food, the waiter came over to take my order, and he like laughed and was like, oh, this isn't a girl who eats breakfast, look at her. And you know, that was just, that's just like a small thing, but it's just like things like that that would never happen to men. And then also, you are always categorized as a feminist, which I am, obviously, but just purely because of what you do, it's like, oh, you're a feminist songwriter, because look at you, you're getting up on stage and singing on your own, you're such a feminist, which is, you know, feminism is really important and is a huge part of my life, but I'm also just doing my job, I'm just like doing what I want to do. It doesn't have to be, it shouldn't always be a political, it shouldn't always be politicized, but it so often is.
So I could really talk to you for ages about this. It's great. Really interesting. I just wanted to come back to some of your song choices. Mm-hmm. So let's just talk about these two that we have on this list, because I've got you to do it. I got you to limit your song list to 5 influential songs. So we've talked about the Velvet Underground, we talked about PJ Harvey and Kate Bush. Maybe you just talk about two very contrasting things. And the first choice that you made was Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. So just say a little bit about why you chose that song.
I love that song. There's something so, I mean, it's very much rooted in like an everyday kind of experience, and the narrative of just, you know, walking around London, you know, but there's something really dreamy and almost fairy tale like about it. And again, there's like a sort of strange childhood innocence about it. And I listened to it loads when I moved to London, when I'd first arrived, and I didn't really know anyone in the whole city. And I had, because I'm, you know, I grew up in the countryside, so I'd really romanticized London as this kind of like magical place where I would meet people like me and I would have all these amazing adventures. And when I got to London, I just didn't know anyone. It was really lonely for the first few months.